2002, almost 20 years ago, I stood right here, actually I stood over there, and delivered a sermon called Love Yourself, A Fat Girl Speaks, in which I talked about weight prejudice, my experience with fen-phen, and how the cheapest way to renovate your bathroom is to throw your scale away. In the end, I said, love the body you have today, and promised that I would go forth and do the same. Since then, I've been through some stuff. I lost my job, my best friend dropped dead the next year, the recession hit, and I struggled to pay bills. I tried desperately to have a baby and failed. Then my brother Nick died suddenly at the age of 33, and my mother lost Nancy, her partner of 33 years. It was a long and painful goodbye following a stroke. And then I found myself in the midst of an exhausting 3-year divorce. I made some terrible decisions during that time. I recognize now that I hurt myself daily. I hated my life. I felt like there was no escape. And for many years, years when you may or may not have noticed, I was rarely here. Loving myself was the last thing on my mind. But in time, with therapy and good friends, and the love of many cats, I found my way back. I discovered that I wanted to live. And folks, that is in no small part because of the woman who is speaking here today. She is my favorite human. She is fierce and funny and brave as hell. She makes my heart beat faster and opens my mind to possibilities. Maggie loves justice and penguins and Spock. And for reasons I don't quite understand, white chocolate truffles. And she's taught me so much about living and loving well in a fat body. A particularly vital skill set in a world that doesn't want or love fat bodies. In just the 3 years, 5 months, and 8 days today, since we met, she's taught me a lot about being and loving myself. My friends, it is my great pleasure to introduce to you my wife, Maggie Burge Caracappa.
Amy is also my favorite human. So, our consumer culture is built on offering a solution to a problem we didn't even know we had. We are bombarded every day with messages that tell us we are lacking in something. And this product, whatever it is, will fix it for you. You'll be happier, healthier, and have a life full of love and acceptance and friendship. It tries to create a constant feeling of inadequacy. When you're living a life of loving yourself, it's easier to recognize that you don't need fixing and are okay the way you are. But when you are living in a fat body, you are told over and over that you don't deserve love and acceptance until you shrink your body. And you should be ashamed of yourself. The problem we have is fatness, and here are literally thousands of products to fix it. Overcoming fat phobia has been and continues to be some of the hardest work of my life. Like Amy, I am a diet survivor. I counted and cataloged each bite of food, berating myself for each calorie over my budget, congratulating myself on each pound lost, and beating myself up for each pound gained. I was lucky to break free and learn to love myself instead. My mother never got that chance. I watched her for decades struggle with her weight, counting and weighing endlessly. I listened when she, at her lowest weight, told me she wished she'd been a better role model for me. Because her shame was not just for herself, but the fact that she had raised a fat daughter. On some level, she looked at me and saw her beloved, talented, amazing daughter, but she also saw a problem that needed fixing. When I lost her to a heart attack 18 months ago, she was in the midst of another campaign to lose weight. I will never know what caused her death, but I do know that the years of weight cycling she put her body through weakens the heart. To help deal with my grief, I started a blog just over 6 months ago that focuses on discussing the issues that people of size face on a daily basis that impact our dignity, our health and well-being, and our ability to simply exist. It's not easy for me to stand in front of you, most of whom I don't really know, and offer this to you. It's intensely personal. But I also believe strongly that I was given a voice to talk about these things for people like my mother. Fat phobia and discrimination is intersectional with most other kinds of marginalization. It is linked to racism, misogyny, classism, homophobia, transphobia, and ableism. It values one kind of body as the ideal and says that all other ways of having a body are wrong. It is institutionalized and systemic and frequently goes unnoticed and unremarked upon. Fat phobia is directly in opposition to the first principle of dignity, inherent dignity and worth of all people. And when we engage in fat phobic behaviors, especially when we internalize that fat phobia, we deny that principle. Being people of size in a world not designed for us, that says we do not deserve comfort or ease, we confront fat phobia on a daily basis, and we have heard the stories of others like us. Just the other day, our friend Kathleen posted on Facebook a video from her friend Stacy. Stacy walked out of her front door in a fat body, and this happened. She wrote, "In case you were wondering how many steps a fat person must take from their front door before someone yells, 'Look at that pig over there.' The answer is 35. Some days less, some days more. Today, it was 35. Seats on public transportation, on airplanes, in restaurants, in classrooms are too small. Safety of cars and efficacy of medications aren't tested on bodies like ours because we are considered outliers. Clothing, when we can find it made for our bodies, costs us twice or three times or more as much as it does for others. Employers are less likely to promote us and less likely to hire us in the first place. Medical professionals are taught that fat bodies are always unhealthy, and so they recommend sometimes radical methods for weight loss as our treatment and stop there. We are congratulated by our doctors for losing weight. Meanwhile, malignant cancers are going undetected and progressing past the point of where treatment will help. And to keep another generation from becoming fat adults, a national group of pediatricians recommends children as young as 12 years old, especially those from underserved communities, meaning Black and brown children, have greater access to bariatric surgery. That means cutting a child's stomach down to the size where it can only hold a maximum of a single cup of food at a time, and then forcing that child into a lifetime of restrictive eating. And, as if that wasn't enough, there are the constant microaggressions disguised as concern for our health, because it is not only medical professionals who are taught that fat bodies are always unhealthy. There is an entire industry out there that depends on it. Friends, family members, colleagues, and even strangers offer us their completely unsolicited health advice, criticizing and commenting on what we eat, or what we don't eat, or our lack of exercise, or how much exercise we get, or what kind. We are assumed to be lazy and gluttonous and in need of immediate correction, lest we just keel over and die. When we eat foods that are perceived as being unhealthy, then we just prove the point. When we eat foods that are perceived as being healthy, we can only be doing it in an effort to lose weight. It's the same when we move our bodies. It can't be that we simply enjoy going for a walk on a fall day. It has to be that we are fixing the problem of losing weight, of our weight. And then, at the same time, we are heckled and derided in the gym or on the street, as Stacy was, by thin-presenting people who don't want us in their spaces, who fear they might one day look like us and hate us for it. The whole thing is exhausting and angering, and it's far past time for things to change. Diversity and inclusion work frequently does not include body size, and in fact, in most states, it is completely legal to discriminate against people of size. We can be denied service, as Anne Grauer found out when she was denied service at a spa in Chicago that she'd been to before for being over the newly imposed weight limit that was for women only and not men. We can be thrown off of airplanes and out of restaurants. When you are told over and over that you don't deserve something, you have no choice but to believe it. Fortunately, body acceptance and body positivity is making inroads into our culture, and we are no longer the only voices speaking out. When it comes to the dignity and worth of fat people, all of us need to be who we say we are. Because people of size do not owe anyone our story or diagnosis. We don't owe anyone exercise or food restrictions to exist. We don't owe anyone health or physical ability. We have dignity and worth no matter what we do with our bodies. And there are some simple things we can all do to help. These tips are adapted from an article written by Danny Beckett titled 51 Ways to Make the World Less Hostile to Fat People. Don't worry, I'm not going to go through all 51. I am, however, going to go over the top five that really resonate with me. Number one, if someone refers to themselves as fat, don't fall over yourself trying to correct them. Instead, ask yourself why you've attached a negative value to the word. Then work on unlinking that negative value from the word. It's just a descriptor, it's just like blue, or snazzy, or sweet. Number two, understand that diets don't work and are the evil child of capitalism and body-shaming culture. Over 95% of people who lose weight through dieting put the weight back on within 5 years. If diets worked, the diet industry would be financially unsustainable. Also, the companies that profit from marketing indulgent foods and overeating at the holidays are the same ones profiting from selling diet products come January 1. Number three. Refrain from giving a fat person unsolicited advice about weight loss. Even if it totally worked for you, even if you think you're being helpful, even especially if that person is related to you. Trust me, you do not have anything we have not already heard 1,000 times before. You are not the fat whisperer. And especially, stop commenting on others' weight under the guise of concern about their medical health. Unless you are my doctor, I am actively bleeding from a visible wound, or I have asked you for it with my actual words, keep it inside. Number four, make sure your allyship extends to all fat people. Not just small fat folks, not just white fat folks, and not just able-bodied fat folks. Fat phobia has its roots in racism and white supremacy. In the early 1800s, colonialist scientists used fatness as one of the markers for social hierarchies, with fatness as one of the uncivilized characteristics attributed to the black and indigenous people placed at the bottom of this scale. Number five, call out your friends, family members, and coworkers when they fat-shame people in front of you. Don't leave it only to fat folk to call out fat-shaming. The emotional labor of defending ourselves is exhausting. Fat positivity is complex. It involves years of undoing internalized shame and often the misogyny, racism, classism, and ableism that's linked to it. Some days, we will be angry and ready to take on the world. Other days, we'll feel terrible and sad. We need thin and thin-passing people to help. I am one of the lucky ones. With therapy and good friends, like Amy said, I am living a life of loving myself. But I cannot love myself into systemic change. Just as you have listened to the stories of people of color and people in the trans and queer community, listen to the stories of fat people, some of whom are also people of color and people in the trans and queer community. We will experience problems in our daily lives that you won't know anything about. Some of it may sound alien or unlikely, but believe these stories and let them inform how you treat people and how you can make your corner of the world a little more welcoming. Thank you very much for listening to my story today.